This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international programme of the non-profit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hi everyone at home and welcome. This is To The Journey. I'm your co-host, Kay Shaw. And with me as always are...
Zachary Fruling and...
Suzanne Williamson.
Well, today we are diving back into... I'm not really quite sure what to say. Diving back into the pits of ridiculousness is what we're doing tonight.
That's what we do every time.
Are you referring to our epic movie... The Progenitors?
I am referring to our epic movie, The Progenitors, of which we are about to attempt to write movie two.
The sequel!
We put some great, albeit weird, stuff in our movie last
night. We did put some excellent weird stuff in our movie.
Weirder than Brandon Braga's weird stuff.
I'm not quite sure how we're going to equal that or top that, but...
You can't top the temporal Hoover. It's just impossible.
You can't top the temporal Hoover.
Yeah, I feel like we missed an opportunity to name that show Temporal Hoover.
But that would have given it away.
It would have given it away. And The Progenitors is a good title.
It's nice and vague. Didn't really give away any the plot progenitors. Points.
Plus, it sounds very 80s movie titled The Progenitors.
In a world. Yeah, all it needs is the movie.
Created
the movie
by nanoprobes.
In a world created by nanoprobes.
TM.
Inhabited by lizard babies.
So, yeah, I mean, if you didn't enjoy our last one, you should probably tune out now, because I don't think this is going to be any better, to be honest.
It's just going to go off the rails from here, folks.
It is, but I think what we can do, actually, is take the opportunity to talk about some things that we mentioned when we've been doing various other episodes of, oh, we could put that into the movie because it didn't get dealt with. So maybe we can actually kind of try and tie up some interesting Voyager loose ends.
Well, it's not exactly a Star Trek Nazi cliffhanger kind of cliffhanger, but we did leave some loose threads.
We definitely
yes,
left some
we
loose
did.
Threads.
Some interesting ones, too.
Yeah, and we left some very unexplained things that... Oh, do we still need to explain stuff that we didn't explain in the first movie? Because I'm worried about how the lizard babies got back in time.
They used Dr. Brown's DeLorean. That's how they went back in time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
How did they go back in time?
I don't know. We never decided how they went back in time.
You don't expect me to remember this crazy movie we wrote last time, do you?
We did not come up with a reason why the lizard babies went back in time or how they went back in time.
The temporal Hoover.
Yeah, it had to do with nanoprobes.
Is it all part of the same problem?
All had to do with the nanoprobes. Yes.
Okay.
They are blamed for everything.
The disruption of the space-time continuum by the nanoprobes.
Yes.
Sucked. The lizard babies back into the past for no good reason other than because it makes our story make sense. Okay, I'm fine with that.
Well, if you're totally confused at this point, if you haven't figured it out already, we are going to write a sequel to The Progenitors. We're going to write The Progenitors 2, which may or may not have another title. We don't know yet. I feel like we need some sort of analogous, like, Khan scream. Like, in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, you get, Khan! Would it be something like, Catherine!
Now, we've already had that.
Well, before we dive in to do The Progenitors 2, Kay, do you want to do one of your epic, only Kay could do it, synopses of
our
last movie?
I'm not sure I can surpass my previous synopsis.
Yes, give the listeners
I think you totally
a recap.
Should.
We need a recap.
If you haven't heard Kay give this synopsis before, you should go back, listen to The Journey 198, listen to Kay give the synopsis, and then see how much better she's going to do it this time.
Thanks, Zach. I needed that level of pressure.
Just to raise the stakes, right?
I really appreciate you right now.
Just pushing you to the front line.
Yeah, appreciate was not the word you were looking for.
Pushing me under the bus.
And then backing the bus up and running you over again.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks
exactly.
for throwing me under the Delta Flyer.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I can't promise it'll be with the same level of energy that I did it last time, but we'll see what we can do. Right. So, after a whole period of time of discussion, the last time we met, when we three last met...
Is that what we're calling it, a discussion?
In lightning, thunder, or in rain, etc. We're not that far off, actually.
Creative brainstorming session.
I mean, we are like three cackling witches around a cauldron most of the time, so I'm not sure.
That's true.
Yes, I am.
I don't know if anyone's ever described me as cackly before, but okay.
I think we have referred to you as witchy before.
We probably have referred to you as witchy, yeah. Plus, you're also your mirror universe self, which we've agreed on several previous occasions.
Oh, yeah, I haven't shaved in a while, so...
Yes, yeah. twirl the mustache.
Right, so to remind everyone who has listened to it and to fill in everybody that hasn't, here is the synopsis of what we managed to create the last time that we did this. Apologies in advance.
Hold on, I'll give you the warm-up. In a world. Take it from there.
In a world where Voyager has gotten home, but apparently that isn't enough for us.
We want more. More Voyager.
So a month or so later, after we've had time for all of our tearful reunions and promotions and prize giving ceremonies and etc. Zachary, who is horrible, decided that it was much better that Voyager was to get lost again. So what we came up with was that the time cops, led by Captain Van Damme of the Relativity, this is his name, despite the fact that he is also played by Jean-Claude Van Damme. Why he has the same name as his actor, I have no idea.
We need to make it easy for Jean-Claude.
Right, okay, fine. So, Captain Van Damme of the Relativity shows up.
If memory serves, his first officer was Dennis Alexio.
That is true. Yes. First officer Dennis Alexio. Quite correct. And he says, we're going to take you to the 29th century and we're going to put you on trial for your crimes. Why they have to take the 29th century to do this, I have no idea. But apparently... Well, that is key for the plot, so that's what happens. So, off they go to the 29th century, but unfortunately, in the process of going to the 29th century, something weird happens. Don't worry, it's science.
You're saying some kind of phenomenon happens?
Yeah, it's some kind of temporal. Hoover. Yes, temporal Hoover. So they end up in the Delta Quadrant in the 29th century, but they are at the coordinates where they were when the whole thing with the relativity happened.
Yes.
Yes, this makes sense, honestly.
Makes sense so far.
But when they get there, there turns out to be this planet there that wasn't there the last time.
Dun, dun, dun!
Ah! In a shocking twist. I think that part is kind of like the teaser from an original episode. You know, like that. And then we get the credits. Like, now we've got into the Voyager credits. It's a long teaser, but anyway. So obviously, because it's Voyager crew, instead of going, oh no, we're lost again in the Delta Quadrant in the 29th century, like, oh, like a planet to poke. So down they go. And they discover that on this planet are the Voth, which is interesting because it's like,
they
well, these guys
there.
Weren't here the last time. They definitely shouldn't be there. And they walk into the town square and discover there is a giant statue of Janeway and Tom.
How big was it?
It was pretty big. It's like, every time we do this, I talked about Farscape the last time we did this, and I was fixating on the statue. I'm fixating on statues in Farscape again. You know the bit where Crichton gets frozen into the statue?
Like Han did in Frozen in Carbonite kind of thing?
Kind of, yeah. He gets turned into a statue with this, like, other woman that he's supposed to have, inverted commas, married. It's some weird thing. Anyway, everyone should watch Farscape. It's brilliant. It's way more wacko than what we're writing.
I find way that hard to believe.
Oh, no, it really is. It really is insane, but it's brilliant at the same time. It's like Star Trek meets the Muppets.
To quote Zefram Cochran, statue?
You had to tell him about the statue.
Yeah.
Don't tell Tom about the statue.
So obviously they're very confused about the fact that there's this statue of them. They're like, why is there a statue of us? This is very odd. So I don't know how they get to this. I'm not sure we established how they get to this. But they then do some backwards genetic engineering like we see in the original Voth episode. And it turns out that after all, the Voth are not evolved from hadrosaurs. They're evolved from the lizard babies that have travelled back in time.
Lizard babies!
Revelation of revelations.
So they are originally from Earth, essentially, but not in quite the way that they thought.
In a roundabout way.
So, it turns out that the reason that this whole situation has arisen is because during the relativity incident, because we had Seven of Nine going back in time lots of times, something happened with her nanoprobes.
She dropped some here and there.
Yeah, they leaked into subspace, or they leaked into, like, the gaps between the temporal time-space thingy thing in the
space. The space between there. Spaces?
Yeah. The bit that glues the time and the space together started coming a bit unglued because of it. That sounds legit.
Those pesky nanoprobes.
Mm-hmm. So that happens, and then they kind of wander off and mutate. They create this planet, which is in fact a planet that is artificially created, kind of like a Borg sphere, but it's got stuff growing on the outside of it, as it is actually a planet. Then they wander off across the Delta Quadrant and, in the process of mutating, create a virus which infects the Voth. So the Voth are like, well, that sucks. And now we have this nanoprobe virus. Like you would if you got infected with a virus that you couldn't cure. You'd be like, well, that sucks.
Well, that sucks. Yeah.
So they go off on a quest to try and find out what has happened. That's when they find the planet. I feel at this point I should insert what I thought in the first place when I said this, but which I don't think we actually said the last time, which was, well, they're not actually living there. They're just kind of, they're doing science there so that they can try and work out how to cure the virus. That's why they're there. They're not just, they're not just like, oh, we found the planet that caused our virus. Now we're going to live on it. Because that's really weird. So it's more like a science kind of facility than it is a colony or whatever.
It sounds like you're retconning our last movie to me.
Yeah, well, I'm making it make sense, which we struggled to do last time, apparently.
Is remarkably coherent for us.
So, as a consequence of going down there, because Janeway and Tom obviously share genetic predisposition towards things with the Voth, because they are the progenitors of them, they also catch the virus.
No!
I feel like I should be doing like mission log now and going act three.
So I can't remember, is it like they caught the virus, like why it's not able to go back to the Enterprise D in that first season episode of TNG? Are they stuck there together because they have the virus now? Is that the direction
we're going? Kind of like in Resolutions. That kind of like virus thing, they landed on the planet.
Oh, that, yeah, virus. Sure. Like Resolutions too.
Obviously now the Doctor is working very hard on trying to cure the virus. Kes, who has also shown up due to the temporal hoover, is helping Tuvok to fix his mind thing because he didn't manage to get it fixed in time. His, whatever the heck it's called.
That Alzheimer's type thing.
My brain's just filled it in with the name of the disease that the guy has from the Cardassian prison camp in Deep Space Nine. Kalanora! I was like, no.
But no, in Tuvok's case, memory doesn't serve.
No. And if my memory serves, that is part of the reason that Neelix gets his long-sought promotion to security chief.
Yes, which we missed out of the synopsis last time. He gets promoted because we decided that through some bizarre twist that we can't explain.
Temporal Hoover.
The guy who's the coffee shop guy from Non Sequitur also shows up, and he is now in charge of the canteen.
He's got to do a better job than Neelix, you know it.
That's true. So Neelix is now tactical officer.
That's right. He's running a space Starbucks up there on...
Yeah. Space Starbucks. We finally got Neelix into the uniform. Woohoo.
And Janeway is totally happy. She's like, whoa, space Starbucks right here. Awesome.
Yeah. Well, she would be if she wasn't currently dying of a nanoprobe virus, but...
She's as happy as she can be.
It's okay. Dr. Joe managed to secure the virus. Woohoo!
But things go downhill from there because the movie's not over yet.
Yeah, it's true. We couldn't leave it all fixed. That would.
That sounds too happy.
There was no door for
no room
the second
for a sequel.
Movie.
So what's the door?
Well, they managed to fix the problem with the nanoprobes, restore subspace, but that is what was causing the temporal hoover. Therefore, they've cut off their ability to go home to the Alpha Quadrant.
So they blew up the caretaker again, in theory.
Effectively. Yeah. And to make it even worse than it was the first time, because Zach is mean like that.
And I'm happy because Voyager is stranded again.
You're an evil man.
So, so mean.
That's not mean. That's just
it
Voyager.
It is mean.
That's what it's Voyager's good
mean.
At.
They spent 7 years. Seven trying years. Trying to get home. Being trying to get
seven of their happiest
Janeway
years.
What did in order to get them home, and then a month home and they lost again. She's going to show up again and she's going to be like, look, I can't help you guys.
You guys are up a creek.
You guys are hell-bent on getting lost.
You just are so determined to get lost. So, can't get back to the Alpha Quadrant. And despite the fact that, you know, they've got the time ship, they can't go back to the 24th century in the Delta Quadrant because they would meet their previous versions of themselves and just blow the timeline out of the water. So they've got to stay in the 29th century as well.
Yeah, very, very back to the future. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or very Time Cop, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Very Time Cop, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme. You see how we got here, can't you? You can just follow the thread.
It's also very older Spock, because older Spock always reminds younger Spock that universe-ending paradoxes will ensue. Yeah,
that is very true. So just when you think that that couldn't possibly be any worse, because that's worse than our situation we had the first time, Voyager's gel packs also get infected with a nanoprobe virus. And unfortunately, because they don't manage to cure it in time, Voyager gets destroyed.
No!
Dun, dun, dun!
Dun, dun, dun!
So our intrepid crew have to end up on the time ship Relativity with the Time Cop crew.
And I love this role reversal because we get to see our Voyager crew being part of someone else's crew, and they still have to give the inspiring one crew, one ship speech.
Captain Janeway is now first officer to Captain Van Damme.
What happened to Dennis Alexio? Did he get killed in the fray?
He's still there, or he could die.
Like demoted?
You decide. We'll decide that in a minute.
Let's say he got demoted, so we have to have some resentment.
Yeah.
What about Chakotay?
Well, we can decide all that in a minute.
Okay.
But we have one more plot point that is very important that we have to mention for the end of our synopsis, and then we can start throwing all of this stuff together. So, in the very last frame of the movie, we get a nice little speech. Well, this is after speech. So we get this speech. Captain Van Damme does a speech, one ship, one crew, etc., in an exciting mirror of Janeway's speech, although obviously it's not as good as Janeway's was. And then at the very last frame of the movie, there's somebody at the back, kind of at one of the stations, tapping away, da 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 da, and he turns round, and it's Mr. Henry Starling from Future's End.
No!
How's that for a cliffhanger? I like this speech, though. One ship, one crew, a time ship crew.
So there you go. That's where we were. So what are we going to do now?
What happens to Chakotay?
Chakotay's still there. He's just not first officer.
So is he first officer's assistant then?
No, he doesn't report to Janeway because then they can sleep together.
Thank you. Yes. Best movie ever.
I think Dennis Alexio stays on board and he gets demoted, so he's resentful of Captain Janeway. So we got to have some dramatic tension there. But I think what I want to see, remember how in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, Captain Kirk is, Admiral Kirk at that point, is feeling kind of depressed, like he feels old and he doesn't have his command anymore and he's kind of down in the dumps, and Dr. McCoy has to give him this in speech, like, you got to get back your command. I want to see Captain Janeway having the same kind of despondent moment. I want her to be all sullen, like, I can't believe I let my crew get stranded again. And I wanted, like almost like she is in Night when she's all depressed. I want to see a sullen, depressed first officer Janeway.
Okay. Why are you so mean, Zach?
First,
you get her stranded again, and then you try and have her blame herself.
Because it's setting up the climax of the movie and the catharsis to end the movie.
Wow. He's way ahead of us.
He's just mean.
You're way ahead of
us. I know my Aristotle's poetics. I know how drama goes.
I can't even enjoy the Janeway-Chakotay relationship for 30 seconds before he puts me in Debbie Downer mode.
Yeah, I'm with Suzanne.
Well, maybe that's how she gets over it.
She gets over being depressed by boinking Chakotay.
Why not? Just as effective as anything else, I guess.
We're not making that kind of movie.
No, we're not.
What kind of movie are we making here, you guys?
This is not an X-rated flick.
So he's ditched Seven by this point, right?
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking she'd just go hang out and talk to Coffee Guy.
You mean she'd be having a bit of a bartender moment, but with Space Starbucks guy.
With Space Starbucks guy.
So has the non-sequitur dude taken over the galley on the Relativity now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I kind of like the idea. I mean, kind of like in Star Trek Beyond when Captain Kirk and Dr. McCoy are drinking Chekhov's, not vodka, ironically, he's drinking Chekhov's whiskey, I guess. And they're having a bartender moment right there, you know, between the two of them. I picture kind of a bartender moment between Captain Janeway and Space Starbucks guy. First Officer Janeway.
First Officer Janeway. Commander Janeway.
Commander Janeway.
Yeah, and they have a whole confessional thing. And
that's all I got. That's my starting point. So yeah, Space Starbucks guy would be like, Commander, you need to spend some time with Chakotay.
Yeah. She needs to go have another moonlight sail on holodeck.
Go to the holodeck,
right?
Do you think on a time ship, the holodeck is actually in four dimensions instead of three dimensions?
I don't think they have a holodeck. They were strictly business.
They need
business.
To have a holodeck.
No, they were very businesslike on the time ship. That's true.
They probably have holo projectors for, investigative stuff. You know, because we see several times through Star Trek where they use the holodeck to, run simulations. So they must have something like that.
You're saying they run temporal simulations in their fourth dimensional
yes.
holodeck on
So that
the
makes
ship.
Perfect sense that it would be a four-dimensional holodeck.
So what, oh my gosh, what happens when their holodeck goes on the fritz, as holodecks are often
do? Do they get stuck in a different time period? Like, oh my god, we're not stuck in Captain Proton, we're stuck in some other century.
Okay, so we're starting off with depressed Janeway. We need to have a moment of them realizing that it's Henry Starling and then working out what the heck he's doing there.
Okay, so let's back up a little bit. They turn around and Henry Starling is there, and then fill in the blank.
He says, I would have got away with this if it wasn't for you pesky kids.
Gotta love a good Scooby-Doo moment.
Well, yeah, he's not gonna be impressed that they've shown up because he's undercover, isn't he? And they have rumbled him.
Are you saying they give him Starling snacks?
So, my idea about how he ended up there was, you know, at the end of Future's End where he's, trying to get away on the Aeon and then they destroy the ship and everybody assumes that he's dead?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. He's
well,
not dead.
He's not. He's ended up in the 29th century. Don't ask me how.
It's okay. Temporal Hoover solves all the problems. Temporal Hoover. Boom. He's in the 29th
Temporal
century.
Temporal Hoover. Boom. He's in the 29th century.
Exactly. It's not important, right? Okay, then what? So they go, you're still here. You're still alive. We thought you were dead.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously he's there in order to steal technology because that's what he was going there for in the first place, wasn't he? So he's probably just stealing chunks of tech out of the ship and just squirreling them away in his quarters.
It's isolinear chips. I'll put those in my next Pentium computer.
Yep. So obviously he's there and he's trying to carry on with his nefarious purposes. I'm not sure how this, makes plot, but...
You don't think he realizes the gravity of a situation and he becomes a loyal and faithful and reliable temporal time cop Starfleet officer?
No, because I think he's a capitalist at heart and there's no money in the 29th century, so he just wants to go home.
That's one hell of an identity crisis if you're a capitalist at heart and there's no money anymore.
Yeah.
What if he's not a human to begin with?
Oh, wow, I like this idea.
And maybe he's...
Carry on!
Maybe he's a changeling.
Oh! Do you know, I really like this because I actually wrote down, when we did our Ask Me Anything episode,
mm-hmm.
we got a comment, I think it was from Josh, about wouldn't it have been cool if, in order to have links back to the other series in Voyager, that if we'd had one of the, however many changelings it was that got sent out from the mm-hmm. Founders, show up in the Delta Quadrant?
Mm-hmm. So, to recap, it sounds like, is the real Henry Starling really dead and this is not the real Henry Starling? This is the shape-shifting wannabe Henry Starling?
Is that what you wanted to
is
do?
That what
did
we're
you want
is that
him
what
to
we're
be
saying?
A shape-shifter all
or
the
was
time?
He a shape-shifter
he
all
could have
along?
Been a shape-shifter all along.
Wow. I like that.
And trapped in the past.
As Worf would have said, some type of guerrilla war?
So is he one of the changelings that got sent out from the Gamma Quadrant then?
He could be. I didn't quite think it all the way through. I was just changeling.
I like that as an idea, though.
A capitalist changeling.
Capitalist changeling.
He could happen.
Well, maybe he's not so interested in the money then. Maybe he's more interested in the power, because that's what the changelings seem to be interested in. At least some of the changelings seem to be interested in the power trip.
I think that's true of Henry Starling, right? He was not so much into money. He had all the money already, right? He was already rich.
Yeah, he did already have all the money.
It was a power trip for him.
He kind of wanted to be rich and famous, I think. Maybe he was just trying to take over the Earth, I don't know.
Yeah.
It probably makes more sense then that he was sent there by the Founders to take over the Earth.
Got rich and famous standing on the backs of the lizard babies.
Are we rewriting First Contact now?
So I feel like we're down in the weeds a little bit. Like, we gotta step back. Like, what's the plot? What's happening in this movie?
We're trying to figure out how to get home.
Yeah, we're trying to figure out how to get home.
So, Henry Starling is a shapeshifter. We've got depressed Captain Janeway. We've got demoted former first officer Dennis Alexio. We've got all this weird stuff we described in our synopsis, and now they've got a problem to solve. They've got to figure out how to get out of the 29th century.
I've just figured out how they get home, but I don't think we want to talk about that yet.
Well.
No, that's at the end of the movie, right?
Yeah, I do know exactly how they're going to get home at the end, though. I've just worked it out, but we can't talk about that yet.
Well, since we have a shapeshifter now, the Vorta have to be around somewhere.
Yes,
at least
because
one of
the
them.
Other thing that we discussed was you have to have V-races in our movie for no reason other than because we thought it was funny.
Well, insofar as the Vorta are kind of like the little minions of the Founders, I think Henry Starling's little minion guy, the guy who's like firing the little phaser at you know, the Voyager crew back in the 20th century, he's really a Vorta then.
Yeah.
Okay.
That works.
The stage is set.
The stage is set for some plot.
The die is cast. We have our players. What do they do? I do believe a couple of episodes ago we made this promise that all of the V races are going to make an appearance in our new movie.
Well, that's where we were, wasn't it?
So where are the Vaudois?
The Vaudois, the...
Vaudois. Right,
the Vidians.
The Vidians.
So, you know, the new caretaker apparently had a thing for Vs.
Oh, we've totally ruined a possible chance to, like, incorporate the Vidians at the end of the first movie. I've just realised. We should have had the Vidians come in and cure the virus.
Oh, yeah.
Because the Vidians had a cure for the virus on Resolutions, and they've now cured their own virus by this point.
With the help of the 29th century.
Oh, yeah. Because if they hadn't cured their virus by now in the 29th century, they wouldn't be around anymore, would they? Another 5 centuries of the phage, they'd all be wiped out, I think.
Yeah, they'd be dead.
The Vidians without the phage are kind of meh, aren't they? Because that was their whole shtick. Now they're not trying to steal everybody's organs anymore.
Without the phage, they could get back into their literature and their arts and all of that other stuff that they had before. The phage destroyed their culture.
So you're saying we get to see the, similar to the Vaudois, we get to see the re-emergence of true Vidian culture.
Yes, but unlike the Vaudois, the Vidians are cultured and not evil, sadistic people.
Lots and lots of Vidian classical music on the Vidian version of Ten Forward.
The Doctor's going to love that.
Yes, and the Doctor can sing along with it. You know, they'd come up with little tunes, little ditties he could, you know, perform.
But what does that have to do with the plot of our movie?
It's just a subplot. It doesn't have to really do much
with Since when do subplots in Star Trek have to make any connection to the regular
exactly.
plot? Right? Exactly. This is the B-plot. The Vidian B-plot of our movie is that the Vidian culture resurges. They rediscover their Vidian classical music, and they have a concert in Vidian Ten Forward.
With the Doctor.
Yes.
With the Doctor singing. It's a great scene. I will grant you that. It would be very
interesting. Because the Doctor needs something to do because the virus, the nanoprobe virus has been cured. So he's, you know, sitting around sick bay, twiddling his thumbs.
That's what happens when you cure all the diseases, you know, put yourself out of business as a doctor. I know doctors. They make a lot of money not curing diseases.
There's bound to be another crisis shortly.
I'm sure there is. I don't know. I keep throwing these depressing ideas out for our movies. So I'm a little gun shy now. Phaser shy.
Stop being depressing.
This is the difficult middle part of the trilogy, isn't it?
Well, that's right. Middle parts of the trilogy are always difficult. We should look at the great trilogies of Star Trek past. Okay, so we've got Star Trek 2. We've got Star Trek 3, which is like the middle of a trilogy. And then we've got Star Trek 4, which kind of bookends the trilogy, although they kind of continue
within
Star Trek 5.
Yeah, but we haven't lost anyone on the Genesis planet, so.
So are you thinking our movie is going to be a little more like Star Trek 2, a little more action? We're going to have, like, space fight inside of a space nebula, you know, that kind of thing? Is it that, or is it more like Star Trek 3 in the sense of a middle part of a trilogy?
We haven't figured out what our problem is yet, have we? We need to find a problem to solve.
Well, they need to get home.
That's a big problem.
Well, yeah, but that's... Yeah, but we need an interim problem because they're not going to get home in the second movie.
Okay, the interim problem is the Vaudoir.
I honestly don't think we need a huge plot. I want to see the character interaction. I want to see the Voyager crew, which are mostly Starfleet, a little bit of Maquis in there, former Maquis. I want to see them have to integrate into someone else's crew with the tables turned. I think that's an interesting character stuff, and I don't think we need a huge plot to make that interesting.
But then how do we work the Vaudoir in? Because they could be coming and like, oh, here's a dicer ship. We're going to try and take this one like we tried to take the Voyager. It's That's smaller. True. We could do it.
They could be trying to steal a time ship.
So the Vaudoir trying to steal a time ship is like the main bad guy, the main threat of
yes,
the movie.
Yes, because then they yeah. could use the time ship to go way back in time and defeat their enemies so their world doesn't get destroyed in the first place.
The first time. Yes, I like that.
900 years ago.
Okay, so we need to know how to stop the Vaudoir.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they should get the time ship, at least to start with. You know, a bit like in Basics.
Got it.
We need like a fake out. They've got the ship kind of thing.
No, I see where you're going. So the Vaudoir managed to capture the time ship.
Yeah.
And they marooned this hybrid time cop slash Voyager crew, which is really Starfleet and Maquis, so a pretty complex group of people. They're all marooned somewhere by the Vaudoir, who have taken the time ship.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a big problem. Okay, because they have the overall problem. How do you get... I like this. This is like nesting dolls here, right? We got the big problem, which is how do we get back from the 29th century? The problem inside of that is, in order to do that, we got to get our time ship back.
Yeah, but are we going to leave some people on the time ship hidden like that happened in Basics? Are we just going to rewrite
yes,
Basics?
Yes, who would it be?
Henry Starling. Because he disguised himself as a bin or something, or a plant, or...
Exactly!
Because he's a changeling.
He's a changeling. This works.
Henry Starling is the chair.
Yeah.
Or just a bucket of goo.
The chair.
What is this random bucket of goo doing in the...
So, Henry Starling's disguised himself in order to stay on the ship. This works. I like that. So now he's got to be the good guy and save everyone. Is he going to do that?
You think there's a bucket by the tactical station? It's like someone's like, you know, spitting tobacco juice in it or something.
It's spittoon. Ping.
Henry Starling.
That's just
is
Henry.
Spittoon. Oh, wow. I love this. So, is it just going to be... Because, obviously, we had the Doctor stay last time. Are we going to have him stay again?
No, I think we should mix it up. We don't want to... We want to create a parallel to what happened before, but we don't want to, like, duplicate
but,
it,
well,
right?
Because I think the Doctor ended up staying...
That was before he had his...
Because
he didn't have his
mobile
thingy.
Emitter then, did he?
Mobile emitter, yeah.
Thank you, mobile emitter. I was pointing at my shoulder, folks.
Which he gets in Future's
Any mobile
end.
Emitter should be.
From Henry Starling.
Mm-hmm.
Is it reaching too far to say it would be Henry Starling and Space Starbucks guy?
How would he hide, though?
Yeah, he's a big guy. It could be Officer Neelix.
Yes, wouldn't it be awesome to see badass Neelix?
I want it to be someone from our crew, because otherwise it's like just other people saving the day.
I like the idea of Tactical Officer Neelix. Like, he gets to be badass and wield a phaser and take the ship back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kind of like Lon Suter.
Yeah.
So is Neelix going to die?
No. We're not going to kill Neelix. No major character death, thank you. No major
He's
character death.
He's not a major character.
Lies.
There are major character deaths in Star Trek movies.
Yeah, but they've
Don't
sucked.
Make me mention Spock and Data.
Progenitors 3, The Search for Neelix.
Spock gets better.
I can kind of picture it like Neelix is like, it's my moment in the spotlight. I'm going to retake the ship. And he grabs his phaser rifle and he goes around the corner to retake the ship, or at least the quarter from the videos, and he gets shot. And that's the end of Neelix. That's terrible. Like, so much for Neelix. 15 minutes of fame, cup of coffee in the big time from Space Starbucks, man.
Is it because the phaser rifle was Henry Starling?
It misfired, like some shoddy 29th century
no.
technology.
Henry Starling was the phaser rifle. It wasn't actually
he was
a phaser
hiding.
Rifle.
It's not a real phaser rifle.
Henry Starling.
I was just thinking it would be tragic. Like, I'm going to be a hero. It's my big chance. I'm a tactical officer now. And boom, he's dead.
I don't know how I feel about that.
It's just, I just thought it was a hilariously tragic scene.
It is hilariously tragic. People would not be expecting it. I don't know.
Well, that's what the sequel of this one is for, like Star Trek III, The Search for Neelix.
But he's dead. There's no search. And there's no Genesis planet to throw him onto.
Nanoprobes.
No, we fixed the nanoprobes. We thought we fixed the nanoprobes.
Nanoprobes fix anything in Voyager. So you don't like my...
Only if he turns out to not actually be dead.
I'm happy with that. I think it could be a total red herring. Absolutely.
How can he not be dead? I'm seeing him as the lawn suitor of this movie, making the ultimate sacrifice to save the ship.
It could be a red herring, because what if the Vidians actually like take Neelix's body and they reanimate him with their Vidian medicine?
With their Vidian voodoo?
The Vidian doo-doo, yes.
Vidian voodoo!
I think this will work. We're going to make this work out. So Neelix is enthusiastic. He's a newly promoted tactical officer. It's his responsibility now to retake a Voyager.
Yep.
He grabs his phaser rifle, which is really Henry Starling in disguise for some reason. And he swings around the corner with a phaser rifle, tries to shoot. It misfires because it's not a real phaser rifle. It's Henry Starling, fake Henry Starling. And Neelix gets shot and is seemingly dead. Fooling the audience, except for all of you right now who know the real story.
Yeah.
But fooling the real audience into thinking Neelix is dead. But it's a red herring, and with funny, crazy 29th century Vidian voodoo medicine, they're going to reanimate Neelix.
But how do they get Neelix off of the relativity?
Well, they're going to get the relativity back because Henry Starling's going to save the day after Neelix dies.
Okay.
So Neelix is just seeming dead there on the ship. Not taken by the Vidians yet.
Well, he is dead.
So Henry Starling, when the Vidians were on the ship making music with the Doctor, made friends with some of them, is what you're saying.
So that's an important point. He's actually dead. He's not just seeming dead. He's actually dead.
Yes.
Okay.
Temporarily dead, but
as dead as you can be if you're brought back to life. Yeah.
Yeah. So in a brilliant twist, Henry Starling retakes the ship from the Vardwell. How's this going to happen?
With the help of his Vidian friends.
He could shapeshift into a Vardwar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
He has that power.
He could kill the captain, Vardwar captain, and shapeshift into him.
Yes,
and that we made it sound way too easy, but how does he do that? What are the mechanics? How does he weasel his way into doing this?
He could hide in the captain's quarters as a chair or whatever.
So literally, Henry Starling is the chair.
Yes. He has to be the chair at some point.
I was kind of joking, but now we've made it a thing. Henry Starling is the chair in the captain's quarters.
When he's not the phaser rifle.
It's better than being the spittoon.
Yes.
So now I'm kind of picturing it. So like the captain, the Vardwar captain, like goes into his quarters and he's like ready to sit down for a nightcap. And he like goes to the replicators, like, give me a Vardwar nightcap. And he sits down in the chair, which is really Henry Starling. And then Henry Starling surprises him and morphs in some way from the chair.
Snaps his neck.
Like, does it like envelop him like the Blob or something?
Yeah.
Like, do you see the scene of like the Vardwar captain kind of fading into this shape-shifting blob of goo? This, you know, it could be a terrifying scene, like Chekhov going, with a thing going into his ear, could be melting into a blob.
Yeah, that would be very cool.
And that would become a meme forever, like hashtag Henry Starling is the chair.
When he's not the spittoon or the phaser rifle, he's the chair.
He's everywhere.
Watch out, Jeffrey Combs.
Okay, so I've done my best to drive this plot forward.
Is that what you were calling it?
Yeah, we've got some plot developments. Neelix is dead. Henry Starling was the chair, but now he's killed the Vardwar captain.
So he's posing as the captain.
This sounds like a crappy plot, at least. So after all of these hijinks, we have... Henry Starling has shapeshifted and replaced the Vardwar captain, and he is in command of the Vardwar ship.
Yep.
So it's Henry Starling to the rescue. Fake Henry Starling.
Yeah, so he's now got to try and, like, manipulate it so that they go back and get everyone and get the ship back, but I'm not quite sure how he's going
to
do that.
How does he do that without everyone, like, being onto him?
Well, I mean, they're not going to know that he's a changeling, and they probably haven't even ever come across changelings, so they're not going to suspect it, are they?
They're not going to know.
I feel like if it's the Vardwar, we got to get a subspace corridor in there somewhere.
Well, that's how they sneak up on the relativity. Just
right,
right out of a corridor.
Yep. But do they use it to get out of the conundrum? Like, does he take the ship into a subspace corridor or something like that?
I think if the Vaudoir, you know, surprised the relativity at first by popping up out of one, you don't need to see it again.
I am just having a whole thing now where I'm like, what if the Vaudoir's subspace corridors in the first place were caused by the nanoprobes? Just in a whole weird, you know, because you know, like, Braxton in Future's End, he does this whole speech about A causes B causes C causes A.
I needed to clarify a point here, I think. We are on the time ship. We are not on the Vaudoir ship. We are on the time ship, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Yeah. So now what they're going to do is they're going to try and take the time ship, or what the captain would have done if he was still there was to take the time ship back so that they can go before the Vaudoir planet gets destroyed. Yeah?
Yes.
Yes.
So he's got to, like, look like he's doing that, but then somehow sabotage it so it doesn't
happen.
And
hook up with the Vidians to get the rest of these guys off the ship.
Yeah.
And save Neelix.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but that happens afterwards. Because that's just like a side thing. Oh, we can fix him.
Like the happy ending. Like, oh, Neelix isn't really dead. Yay, we get in the movie. High note.
They live happily ever after. Yeah.
They have a little chuckle on the bridge. Ha ha ha. And then the movie ends.
It'd be like the original series.
Yeah,
so he does a fake trying to get there, but he's actually taken out, like, the bit that makes the time ship actually work and, like, hidden it in his back pocket, which he obviously has because he's made one, because he's a changer.
Yeah, he just turned into a back pocket, right?
He's turned into a back pocket.
He was tired of being the spittoon.
He didn't have a back pocket, he turned into a back pocket.
So, yeah, it doesn't work. And then that's when the Vidians show up. He doesn't have any plan beyond stopping them going back to whatever century they need to go back to stop their thing from dying, their planet from dying. I don't know. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm still kind of dwelling on this end scene we were just describing of, you know, reanimated Neelix having a chuckle with everyone on the bridge.
We're not there yet.
I know, but
we need to get there.
I'm anticipating it. Like, I can picture this little scene, though, where it's like, no, it's important. Yeah, I was picturing
the middle part
first. Someone says, oh, Neelix, you're kind of a crappy tactical officer. And he goes, oh, Captain. And they have a laugh, you know.
And by this time, Tuvok's been cured of his problem, so he can go back.
Thank God.
Leaving Neelix with nothing to do because they got the space Starbucks dude.
He gets to be sous-chef to the space Starbucks dude.
Okay, so we need to come up with the middle part before we can even get there. And we need to figure out how to get home.
The Vidians then show up and stop the Vaudoir as well. And, like, get them off the ship. Help Henry Starling get them off the ship.
Okay.
And then they go back and get everybody from the planet. What were they doing in the meanwhile? Well, I feel we need them to have been doing something.
The Vidians?
No, our crew.
Yeah, everyone who got left on the planet needs to have been doing something.
Captain Van Damme.
No, they're trying to
First
stay alive, right?
Janeway.
Like in Basics, they go foraging for food and bugs and they burn hair to stay alive. It's like
in
survival
Chakotay's
mode, right?
Chakotay's the rubbish Indian that can't start a fire, etc. Yeah.
Not all the Voyager tropes. No, it needs to be something better than that. But they need
something.
They're on the planet.
It needs to be something more
stuck.
Interesting than that. They need to find something interesting on this planet.
Yes, I agree.
How about, right, because now we've tied up loads of loose ends. I know they still need to get home, but we've tied a bit too much up. We're not really leaving any cliffhangers. So I think we need to, like, have something on the planet that they need to then solve in movie 3.
So we need some interesting mystery, some object, some phenomenon on this planet. Are you thinking like Guardian of Forever? Or are you thinking like some sort of device? Or are you thinking like some person?
If it was the Guardian of Forever, they could just go home, though.
Yeah.
So.
Well, they'd have to talk them into it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they'd have a good reason for doing it, wouldn't they? Because they're like, well, that's where we're supposed to be, not here in the wrong place and time. And he'd be like, yes, that makes sense. Off you go.
Away with you.
No, the Guardian of Forever would say something cryptic like, I am the beginning of the end, and this is the middle of the... entire thing. I don't know.
I am the walrus.
Yeah, they're still under the movie yet. I can't send you guys home. You've still got another part of the trilogy yet.
Yeah, he'd be like, I am, you are, we are all together. I am the walrus. I am the Eggman. The Guardian of Forever reciting Beatles lyrics would be awesome.
That would be pretty awesome. He's obviously been watching a bit too much 1960s on his screen or whatever. Okay, so yeah, maybe it is the Guardian of Forever then. But he's like, you can't go yet. You're here because you have to do something important.
But how does he say, no, that was too simple. Like, you got to do it in Guardian Forever
speak. You can deal with that bit.
Okay, so I got to come up with a line. So the Guardian of Forever is there, even though he's not supposed to be, like, whoa, there's another Guardian of Forever, and it's right here. Wow, yeah. This is interesting. Okay, like, I read about that in a history book once. Okay, so Guardian of Forever, and he says something like, the time is not now, your destiny is last week.
Yes.
What? You're confusing me.
Well, the Guardian of Forever is so cryptic.
He is cryptic.
Is the Guardian of Forever really Q just messing with people?
I feel we need Q to show up in this set of movies.
We're always invoking Q, like, oh,
or we can
Q
save
Q
for the next one.
Maybe we could have Q show up at the very end.
Yeah.
Maybe Q jumps out through the Guardian of Forever.
No, I got it. Ta-da! The Guardian of Forever would say something like, I have the power to resolve the situation, but the time is not now. Your work is not complete.
And then Q jumps back through the Guardian of Forever and cuts.
Is
the
he
end.
Naked or is he fully clothed?
This is not the Terminator movies. You can jump through with clothes on.
I know, but if he's stripped of his powers, he's usually naked.
No, he definitely has his powers still.
Okay.
Cue the Terminator. Stripped of clothing, jumps through the Guardian of Forever.
Steals Bill Paxton's clothes.
Okay, so Q's now there. Excellent. I like this.
So, again, it just feels like, you know, a bit of like, whoa, the Guardian of Forever came out of nowhere. Why did that happen? You know, that's my sense of this Guardian of Forever angle.
We don't know why he's there yet, but we'll explain it in movie 3.
That's nice punting. Good job.
You don't need to know why yet.
Don't know. It's a great scene, but we'll figure it out next time.
We didn't know why Henry Starling was there in movie 4.
You are a writer, aren't you? Like, I don't have to figure this out now. Yeah. That's for the next one.
That's the next one. You got to leave loose ends, Zach. Otherwise, where are we going to pick up next time?
I feel like you could totally write television.
It doesn't need to make sense.
I could write episodes like Threshold, yeah.
Or Enterprise. Space Nazis? Put them in. Let's Space figure it out next season.
Sounds good to me.
So we've got the Guardian of Forever. The time is not now. They've got more work to do. We have the Vidians.
Who are using their voodoo to bring Neelix back to life.
Yeah. Henry Starling turned into a gun, then turned into a chair, then turned into a back pocket and retook the ship.
He was a spittoon to start with.
I forgot one. Yep.
Can't forget the spittoon.
This is like a great like sequel action movie. This is like Star Trek First Contact where they have to retake the ship, grab the phaser rifles and retake the ship. This is mostly an action movie without a lot of depth.
Nobody's broken the prime directive yet, though. We're going to have to do that.
Nobody's drank tequila.
Maybe Janeway drank tequila coffee in the space Starbucks with... No. That would be grim.
That would be disgusting.
She was drinking Irish coffee. Yes, she was drinking Irish coffee.
There's a Talaxian worm in my tequila.
That's good.
It's good for you.
That's nasty.
Are there any things that we've missed?
Well, I feel like it needs some heart, right? The two things that strike me as having some heart are Captain Janeway at the beginning of the movie being despondent, which we didn't really deal with because she's now Commander Janeway and she's got everyone stuck again. So we didn't really follow up on that.
Chakotay is healing her.
Well, it sounds like we've got the resolution to the first conundrum here, which is now Commander Janeway is despondent, but she's being taken care of by Chakotay. But what the movie's missing is a Neelix is dead cry fest.
Yeah, we need to have a Neelix is dead cry fest.
Okay, so Henry Starling tells him Neelix is dead, not knowing the Vidians are working their voodoo.
Yeah. Right.
So then everybody's now like, no, not Neelix. Oh my gosh.
And then the Vidians show up with Neelix. He's like,
and Neelix
I got better.
And just strolls onto the bridge and is like, what did I miss?
So you're saying while they're in the middle of the cry fest, like it's like they're in the middle, they're bawling tears out because Neelix is dead, and then they show up, and then Starling shows up with the good news. And
mm-hmm. Yeah.
They turn around and Neelix is there like, oh, it's Neelix. Whoa, how did that happen? Yeah, what did I miss? I can kind of live with that. I mean, you don't get to live with the pain of losing Neelix very long.
But we thought that Neelix has been dead for a little while because we've had the whole...
You don't want to see them, like, going through Neelix's quarters and, like, doling out his belongings. Like, you know, Harry, you can have his Talaxian fur fly and...
let me give this apron to Zach because you know he wants it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah, and the hat.
Gotta have the hat.
Do you ever see the deleted scenes from Nemesis when they're going through Data's quarters?
Mm-mm.
No.
After Data's dead? That's what I'm kind of picturing. Like, they're going through Neelix's quarters.
I'm so glad I've never watched that.
Oh, it's sad. And it's
that
like,
would kill me.
If memory serves, Worf gets to adopt Spot.
Oh, you're joking.
Aww.
I don't think so. I think.
Tell him he's a pretty cat.
But can't you picture the scene kind of working for Neelix? Like they're going through Neelix's quarters, giving away all of his weird Talaxian stuff?
Yes.
The stockpile of Leola root.
That would be far funnier. Yes.
What if they pull out some kind of like weird flashing relic and they're like, what is this?
What is it?
I don't know. We'll find out in movie 3.
We'll find out. Q knows what it is.
Q knows what it is. Yeah.
This sounds like the end of a really bad 1960s television show. What is this mysterious thing in Neelix's quarters? Find out next time in The Progenitors 3.
It's like a serial.
Are we actually just writing Voyager Season 8 now?
And we're still on the time ship, so we haven't solved the overall problem. They haven't got back to the 24th century.
Mm-hmm. No.
Are we going to end the movie and they're still in the 29th century, still on the time ship? Is that what we're saying?
Yes.
Okay. Because how they get back is the last movie in the
trilogy. In true middle, you know, second movie in a trilogy form, we have punted all of the heavy lifting to the next episode in the sequel.
Yeah, but everybody's going to come and watch movie 3 though, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Because they want to know how they're going to get back.
Oh, I need to see how this is going to play out now.
If they're going to get
back. So you're basically not optimistic at all that people are going to want to see our movie number 2.
They'll go and see it because the first one was brilliant.
Yeah, they want to know why is Henry Starling there?
Okay, so I feel like we've kind of wrapped it up. I think, Kay, we're going to throw you under the bus once more and make you give a synopsis of the entire movie. You're the only one of us who can remember all the details. I suck at that.
Why did we even start?
We started with Henry Starling being a surprise revelation. That's where we ended the first movie. Mm-hmm. So we picked up and it's like, whoa, it's Henry Starling.
Okay. So they're like, oh my god, Henry Starling. And he's like, I would have gotten away with this if it wasn't for you pesky kids.
The Scooby-Doo scene, got it.
Scooby-Doo
okay.
scene, yeah. Captain Janeway's all depressed about having got everybody lost again, even though it wasn't necessarily her fault.
That's my attempt to make a moody, depressing movie. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she's hanging out in the mess hall with Coffee Dude, drinking potentially tequila-flavored coffee. I'm not quite sure how that
the
works.
The obligatory and he's bartender scene.
Mm-hmm. You should totally go hang with Chakotay and he'll make it all better. So she goes to do that.
And apparently Chakotay does.
He does.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And then what happens next?
Well, at some point we have the Vaudoir show up.
No, we have to have the Vidians show up first. Because then they get to know Henry Starling and the doctor's hanging out with them and singing songs. And
right, yeah, yeah.
We need to build that relationship because we're going to need that relationship later.
Vidian musical scene. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that happens. So they hang out with them, find out that they've cured the phage, and the doctor has his sing along and everything, and it's yay. So they have that, and then the Vidians go on their way, and then they run into the Vaudoir.
Well, somehow it's revealed that Henry Starling
is a changeling,
and he has a Vorta with him.
Yeah,
I don't remember how it's revealed.
Do all the rest of the crew find out that Henry Starling's a changeling?
I don't think so.
I don't think they do. I think they don't know that he's a changeling. That's an interesting twist as well. And obviously they trust him at the end because he saved the ship from the Vaudoir.
But he saved the ship. Is he a good changeling like Odo?
We don't know yet. We're going to find that out in movie 3.
Yeah, that was just him trying to do what he needed to do. Not necessarily for the good of the crew, just what he needed to do.
So at the end of the movie, he really could be like an evil changeling, and he has these little goo-shaped changeling tentacles, and he kind of wraps them together and goes, wah-ha-ha-ha-ha, like, quietly. Excellent! With his little changeling tentacles.
He's C. Montgomery Burns now. Excellent.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's all working according to my plan. I don't know. That sounds so ridiculous, but...
Yeah. So he and Neelix manage to stow away on the ship when the Vaudoir steal it and strand everybody. Freshly promoted tactical officer Neelix. Who managed to stow away because he was having a bath at the time.
Not because of his tactical cunningness?
No. He was having a bath. And they didn't realize he was there because they like looked in the course and they're like, oh, nobody here.
He's like, oh... Something's happening. I better put my tactical uniform back on and grab my phaser rifle.
In a heroic stand, Neelix tries to save the ship, but it turns out that the phaser rifle he grabbed is Henry Starling, and it doesn't work, so Neelix dies.
Yeah, and I want to emphasize, this is like Neelix's moment in the spotlight, his 15 minutes of fame, right? He gets to grab his phaser rifle and go try to retake the ship, and it's an utter failure, and he gets shot.
Yes.
He's a terrible tactical officer.
Yes.
But... Henry Starling then manages to
slither away and go and hide in the captain's quarters as a chair, and then he kind of eats the captain. I don't quite kind of like the blob.
It's like the Stephen King scene, right?
Yes.
The chair turns into a blob which eats Vardwar captain.
Eats the Vardwar captain, and then he disguises himself as the Vardwar captain, hides the bit of the time ship mechanism that actually makes the time ship work, so that when they try and go back into the whatever century they need to do to fix the Vardwar planet, it doesn't work.
He hides it in his back pocket, which is really himself.
Yes. Yes.
He hides it in himself. Yes.
He does. And then the Vidians show up and are like, oh, these Vardwar, they've been such a pain all the time you've been gone. We'll help you to, like, get them off your ship. So they do that. And then they go back and get everybody. Meanwhile, on this planet they found, it turns out there's a Guardian of Forever. Nobody really knows why.
Against all odds.
Yes. And the Guardian of Forever is incredibly cryptic about the reason why it can't send them all back to Earth. And then, at the very end, after we've had a cry fest on the ship and Neelix has been resurrected by the Vidians and shows up going, hi, what are you all crying for?
And he's like, hey, what are you doing with my Talaxian fur fly? I want that back.
We get a cut from them all on the time ship back down to the Guardian of Forever planet where Q pops out of the Guardian of Forever.
Dun, dun, dun!
Dun, dun, dun. Oh, and we had the bit where they're doling out the stuff in Neelix's quarters and they find a really weird artifact.
Yes,
the which is somehow artifact. Related to the Guardian yes. of Forever and or the Q Continuum.
Could be. We'll find out in movie 3. There we go.
We have set up quite a conundrum for ourselves.
We have.
For movie 3.
It's going to be a long movie. It's going to be like Return of the King Extended Edition.
Yeah, like most middle movies, it's not very good. It doesn't actually make sense. I feel like we've written the Temple of Doom.
Yeah, because the first one made Voyager all movies. That sense.
Hey, I love the Temple of Doom.
Really?
Don't you badmouth that movie? Yes.
It's like it's a terrible movie. Really?
No, the last Indiana Jones was terrible.
The Crystal Skulls?
Crystal Skull, yeah, that was awful. Hmm. Temple of Doom was awesome.
Are there other franchises where the second movie was terrible? Because that's what I feel like we wrote. We wrote like a terrible second movie that's going to get way awesome in the third movie.
It's not terrible.
It is not terrible, not dude.
Do you think we wrote an awesome second movie?
Ghostbusters 2 was a bad movie.
I don't think it's terrible.
It's interesting. There's a lot that doesn't add up.
A lot didn't add up in the first movie.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
But actually, Kay, you have a remarkable ability to tie it all together narratively, so I can totally tell that of the two of us, you're the writer of the two, because you can tie these things together narratively and thematically, and I'm like, this doesn't make any sense at all.
What, you mean I can make all the things that don't make sense all not make sense together?
Yes. Pretty much. That's kind
all
of exactly what I
was saying.
All make
equal amounts of nonsense whilst being internally consistent.
And I'm like, wait a minute. I'm like finding these logical holes. Like, wait a minute. What's going on with this object in Neelix's quarters? What does that have to do with anything? You're like, it's okay. It's a
we'll
story.
Find out.
The story's not over yet. We'll find out in the third movie.
Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to know.
No.
It's a mystery.
It is a mystery. Come back and see movie 3. Well, it's been a lot of fun talking about the Voth, the Vardwar, the Vidians, and the Vorta tonight. But that is not the only thing that we've been talking about here on Trek FM. So here are a few other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Literary Treks.
McCoy eventually gets command of the Enterprise, and one of the reasons for this is that he makes little comments to Kirk occasionally about how he has a cushy job. You know, he's got, this nice, comfortable chair he can sit in. Because McCoy, at this point, he's got a lot of people getting sick on the Enterprise. There's colds, there's broken legs or whatever. I mean, there's just, for some reason, sick bay is busy.
The 602 Club.
There's a certain aspect to what's happening with superhero stories where they really sort of want the villains to be more complex, and they want you to sometimes sympathize with them and have their personas be, you know, deeper, richer, you know, perhaps not so pure evil.
The Ready Room.
Yeah, I think it's almost like a journal or a diary entry, a verbal diary reflection in the middle of the episode, yep. When he's reflecting on society. And it's the thing that I love about it, it's all very socially aware and well written. It's really well done. But Spock's verbal description of everything going on struck me this time.
This would be like if In The Next Generation, you hear Captain's Log, First Officer William Riker, recording for Captain Picard, who's currently on holiday.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You will find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can also stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners-only group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose Message to a Trek.fm show and select To the Journey. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at Trek.fm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trek.fm. Kay, if people would like to know if you're really a changeling, where can they find you?
Well, they can find me in the Babel Conference. And if they want to look me up on Twitter, my handle is ChocoWeeble. So, Zach, when you're not dying during your heroic moment, where can our listeners find you?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek.fm as co-host of Metatrek's Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy, along with my co-host over there, Mike Morrison. You can always find me in the Babel Conference if you'd like to talk about Voyager with me over there. And you can find me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Fruhling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, Fruhling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G. And how about you, Suzanne? When you're not busy negotiating with the Guardian of Forever, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
Well, you can find me occasionally popping up in the Babel Conference or track me down on Twitter. My handle is at KJanway8.
Well, if you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and many more, all available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
Well, we have a few amazing people we'd like to acknowledge. First off, being the founder and publisher of Trek FM, C. Brian Jones. Our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp. Aaron Harvey, our art director. Richard Marquez, our production manager. And Brandon Shea Metalla, our Patreon manager. And a really huge thank you goes to our associate producers, Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, Richard Marquez, and Patrick Carlin. Thank you!
So join us next week when I will be disguised as the phaser rifle, Suzanne will be disguised as the chair, and Zachary will be disguised as the spittoon. But until then, this has been To the Journey.